all of these kids that were in distress and so forth, I didn't see them as bad kids.
This is Ivan Cornea, a longtime high school art teacher with a passion for developing young people. The year is 1955, the first year Ivan began teaching in a rural high school. The air in his classroom is thick with the smell of paint and the dust from the hand-cranked pencil sharpener. Student drawings are pinned on the walls, and light comes in through single-paned windows that look out over farm fields, where many of these kids will go work in the evening. The boys that file in sport those flat-top crew cuts, and the girls, the knee-length skirts and saddle shoes that are popular in the 1950s. And all of them carry that awkwardness of teenagers trying to find themselves.
I saw them as people in a different place, and if you took some of the barriers away, they'd move along, and boy, they did it. Some of the best students I ever had were kids that other teachers had rejected.
How does this happen? How do you invite greatness in people who don't see greatness in themselves? This ability is so vital for any leader, any teacher, coach, manager, parent, but how to acquire this ability can feel elusive at best. If this is a skill that you are looking to develop, Ivan's story holds so many answers. Welcome to Leading Outward, the Arbinger Institute's podcast where we explore the tools and ideas that we have used for over 45 years to help people solve their toughest leadership and organizational challenges by leading with an outward mindset, seeing people as people. I'm Mitch Warner. So Ivan, who comes to mind first when you think about these students that have been rejected by other teachers?
I remember when I was teaching sixth period, I had a young man, IQ around 100. His dad was an electrical engineer, and his parents would not accept that he was mentally deficient. Well, he could function, except if somebody didn't remind him to go to the restroom, he'd come to my class and wet his pants. In fact, some of the kids started calling my room the crick. So I got several of the girls aside that I thought I could trust and asked them if they would pick him up after fifth period and take him, not go in the restroom with him, but take him there. And they did, and they became so attached to that guy that it was unbelievable. And to see what happened to them and what happened to him really affected me. I'd had him for 3 years, and I'd never heard his voice or seen his eyes. He'd always come and just sit there. You ought to see his grade point average. It was all D's. Nobody gave him an F because they didn't want him back. Well, I always gave a little preachment every time I introduced a new concept, and lo and behold, that kid had been listening. Because the beginning of the senior year, the door was open into the hall, and the next class had started, and I heard this pitty-pat, 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 pitty-pat coming down the hall, and he came in that door, and he said, "Mr. Cornea, Mr. Cornea," I was walking down the hall and looked somebody right in the eye. Well, from that moment on, you can't imagine what happened to that kid. And when I gave him an A, you can't imagine what happened to me when I went to the faculty room the next time. All those teachers clouded up and rained all over me. How in the world could you give that kid an A? I said, "Come and look at his work." "Well, he doesn't do any." "Come and look at his work." And that day that he came down that hall and had looked somebody in the eye, boy, what a turning point. He got his master's degree, and he became the head in charge of public relations for the state of Arizona through his art. So that's what drew me to kids that were in trouble and difficulty. And in fact, I started shopping for them to get them to take my classes. And some of them became extremely successful.
Given this very first experience, when it comes to developing people, especially people who see themselves as broken, what did you learn?
Well, first of all, they got to become whole. And in the process of becoming whole, they have to have identified for them the things that have happened to them, or they can't pass it on. And as they are making that change, you have to call them aside and say, do you realize what is happening to you? You were here, and explain to them what that was, and now you're here. I discovered early that if a student didn't know where they were at any given moment, if you walked up to a student, say, if grades came out, the final grades came out tomorrow, what grade would you get? If they don't know, and typically in our system, the teacher takes their things and goes in a cloistered area, and those students haven't a clue as to where they stand, whether they're going to get an A or a B or what. And so it dawned on me that I needed to devise ways and means so that they could constantly be checking where they were. But once that is in place, you walk up to that student and say, if grades came out tomorrow, where would you be? And they say, I'm right there. And they have to know that constantly, or I can't tell if I'm progressing. And that's terrible. That's terrible.
That's terrible in every arena. In fact, for employees in organizations, the Trinet and Wakefield Research Group found that 74%, 3 out of 4 employees, rate feeling in the dark about how they are performing as their number one complaint at work. More than compensation or benefits, that's what people crave, and that's what they need. They need to know how they are performing, and it has to be precise. In fact, 40% of the same group surveyed in the study said that even when they get feedback, it's too vague to help them know where they're at.
It's kind of what I'm going through with this disease.
At the time of this interview, Ivan was still in the middle of the long battle with cancer that would ultimately end up taking his life just a few months after this interview. It is remarkable to me that this principle that he is talking about, that applies to developing young, budding artists, as well as to the employees in our organizations, also applies to maintaining hope in the face of a life-threatening disease.
What a reward that is to go to the doctor like I did yesterday and him saying, every one of those numbers are in place, they're in order. You're right on the verge of me being able to declare you're in remission. Now, that doesn't mean I'm cured. That means that they're to the point where they're stopping that cancer as soon as it's starting. Well, you can't imagine what happens to me when I go there and that doctor can point out, you were here, but now you're here.
So, Ivan, what you're experiencing in finding the strength to fight cancer is exactly the same principle at play in helping a kid find it in themselves to throw themselves into their own development. They have to see progress. They have to know where they are.
It's the same kind of thing. They can't detect it typically themselves. But when you identify it for them, they can see it happening. Well, then comes that urge for them to help others, but not until.
It's so interesting to me that this is where Ivan goes. The ultimate aim for Ivan is for these students to begin helping others, to become someone who can develop others, to become a leader themselves. But of course, they would never see themselves as someone who can help lift others until they can see their own progress. In this conversation, I begin to see that perhaps this is the most vital skill to develop if you want to help develop others. It's the ability to enable people to see where they are, to help them measure where they are so that they can then see their own progress. If I can't see where I am, I can't see the gap between my current state and where I could be. And if I then don't see progress closing that gap, then of course I lose motivation. But what about people who are resistant? What about the people who don't want to be developed? So I asked Ivan about this, and of course, another student came immediately to his mind.
It was the beginning of his 10th year. With his parents' permission, he rode his bicycle across the nation to New York City.
Well, we don't even know the name of this kid, but that is pretty cool.
And on his way in Cheyenne, he rode his bicycle through an intersection against a red light, and the police picked him up. And so they took him, and he slept that night in the firehouse. And so the firemen got intrigued by him, and they would notify the fire people ahead of him, so he had a place to stay every night all the way across the nation. And so the second day of school, he came to school. And
what Ivan leaves out here is that this boy missed the first day of class because he was finishing this cross-country bicycle adventure as a 15-year-old, which is why he walked into Ivan's class on the second day of school instead of on the first.
He didn't want to take art, but that was one of the places where there was an opening, and so they just sent him there. The sink was down at the back of the room, and I walked past his desk to go to the sink, and boy, did he say something uncomplimentary to me. And I didn't react at that point, but I made it a point to walk past his desk on the way back, and on the way back, he really unloaded on me. And so I stood there and looked at him for a while and wondered, what is it that this kid has already?
What is it that this kid has already? This is not the question that I would be asking myself if a student just unloaded on me, even if I'm outward, which would be rare in this situation, of course. If I'm outward, I might ask, well, what is he going through? But Ivan's question, it's so strange and it's so cool. It's clear where this boy is lacking. Manners, respect, you know, basic decency. But what does he have? What are the assets that this boy has? What are the qualities that I could work with right now to help him grow? So, Ivan, what does he have already?
Well, it's guts. So I looked at him and said, you don't want to be here, do you? And he said, I sure don't. I said, then get out. You don't have guts enough to do it anyway. Boy, from that moment on, it's just like he poured cement around him. You couldn't have drug him out of that room. And this is what happened from that moment on.
But this that Ivan is referring to here is a large stack of treasured drawings that he starts to show me in the middle of this interview. Drawings that this boy had drawn, preserved now over 50 years.
That was his first drawing of a horse.
Maybe we get over his shoulder or something.
That's just me directing some of our camera crew to capture what we were seeing as Ivan started to look through this treasure trove of drawings and paintings.
Let's pull that up.
I tried to number them as accurately as I could. By the way, I was giving him no instruction. And right here, he said to me, I was on my way home last night, my arms went to sleep. I said, they did? I said, yeah, I was leaning on a post looking at some horses, and I stood there so long my arms went to sleep. And he said, I discovered that I wasn't able to draw their feet. Now watch what happens. Now he's teaching himself. In other words, he's identifying what he doesn't know and going out and finding it. Well, this was at the end of the second day. And that happened.
Okay, this drawing right here is covered with massive, violent scribbles, almost obscuring the horse that's underneath.
And as I watched that happen, that was frustration. He was so upset with himself that he couldn't do better.
And now, drawing after drawing after drawing. Each one of these numbered drawings is an incremental improvement over the last.
Persistent. There's that character again. Now, anyone, if you'll practice that hard and that long, then he came to me and I illustrated that part of the horse's foot. So I drew this and then he did this around it.
All around Ivan's drawing is drawing after drawing, each one better than everything that had come before, many times over better.
Look at the confidence I gave him.
It dawns on me in this moment that the massive leap in this boy's performance, his achievement, is not because of Ivan's modeling of the ideal alone. That had its effect precisely because this boy had wrestled. Ivan had let him wrestle. Ivan had required him to try and try and try. It is not acquaintance with the ideal that enables such massive leaps. It is seeing the ideal in the context of our own hard-fought struggle to try and achieve it.
Gives you quite an insight into the human brain, doesn't it?
I'm beginning to see a pattern here. An important balance in every experience with a struggling student, where Ivan demands the very best that that individual is capable of, but is simultaneously patient enough to let them wrestle.
I had four students in Davis High. There was Joel Isaac, Gary Glissmeyer, Keith Merrill, and Jack Cullimore.
It's not lost on me that Ivan can remember all of these students, going back to the 50s and 60s, by name, like it was yesterday.
I didn't teach them, I just directed traffic, because they were picking up everything that I was giving them, plus a lot of other stuff on the side. Well, this Joel Isaac wasn't as talented as the others, and he came to me one time and said, "I don't want an A until I earn an A. You only give me an A if I deserve it, because I want to use it as a meter to tell where I'm at." Well, he decided that he was going to do on a piece of masonite, 4 by 8 feet, a painting. So I had him do the drawing, and then he transferred it to the masonite, and he did the painting, and he asked me to come down and criticize it, and I went down and looked at it. Went back in the back room and got a bucket of white paint and painted it all out. Said it was no good, you can do better than that. So I did another one. And when he asked me to criticize it, I went back in the back room, got the white paint and painted it out. Now I talked to him. In fact, as I was painting it out, I was telling him what he could have done. Well, that happened 4 times. And the 4th time, there's a girl sitting there, and she just started crying. "How can you do that to him?" Well, then he told her how he could take it, which was the best lesson she ever got in school that year, I'll tell you.
There is so much to unpack here. But I think it's critical to note that just like in every other experience with a struggling student, what Ivan is doing here is dictated by what he sees is needed in this moment. And that's true of every story, person by person. He's just responding to what they as an individual need. And for this reason, it would be such a mistake to say, well, okay, if you're an art teacher, just keep painting over their work. No, you can't do that. It was helpful to this student, to Joe, in this situation. And Ivan's magic is precisely that he doesn't work off a script. He sees both his students and their needs, and then he has the guts to do what is most helpful for them, whatever that is. And hearing the aftermath, what these kids went on to accomplish, is just a testament to that kind of leadership. Okay, so what happened with Joe?
Well, when he graduated from high school, I recommended he go to the Art Center School of Design in Los Angeles, and they always take people that have gone through college there. So he went down, and when they saw how old he was, they wouldn't even talk to him. And he persisted and went back, and he said, "You haven't even looked at the stuff I can do." And so, and by the way, he is probably one of the best airbrush technicians I've ever known. And so they finally succumbed to him, and two of the faculty members looked at his work and they accepted him. Well, as a consequence of him being at the Art Center School of Design, they wrote to me and said, "We will accept any student right out of high school that you will recommend." Well, now Gary. He and another fellow went out to Little Mountain out here hunting. And when they had finished, his friend was putting his gun into the car, and it discharged and shot Gary just above his diaphragm and hit his rib cage. Those two arteries that come out of the heart, that bullet is sitting right there right to this day. It scarred his lungs. Well, he went to Germany and lived with a family where the mother had tuberculosis. Well, by the time he got home, they discovered he had tuberculosis. So they put him in the TB sanitarium, and that was worse than being in prison because nobody could go in there with him. No one. Unless they suited up, as it were. You open the door and they put his food in there, shut that door, and he could take it out from the other side. He wasn't married then, but his sweetheart, the only time he could see her is through the window. That was it. One night his mother called me and said, "He's going to die. He's quit responding. He's just shut himself off. And the only thing he's ever mentioned is you. Would you consider going up and talking to him?" And then she explained I had to put on everything and you were encased. And so I said, "Yes, I'll do that." And I thought, boy, you're putting your whole family in jeopardy. But I couldn't have resisted it. When she asked me, I couldn't have said no. I couldn't have. I went in there and he was lying in his bed, wouldn't even acknowledge that I was there. So I talked at him, and what do you say? And finally, I went to leave, and I said, "Well, goodbye, Gary." And when I took hold of the doorknob, he said, "Will you come back?" I said, "If you'll let me teach you art lessons, I will." He said, "Well, if you did that, you'd have to come back." So I went back every week. The first time I went back, he was sitting with his arms crossed, looking at the sink, looking at the taps on the back of the sink. And as I walked in there, he looked up and said, "You know, I'm locked in this room, but sitting here looking at everything that's in those taps, I could just as well be at Grand Canyon." Then he started telling me what he was seeing, all the reflections and the colors, and The next week when I went back, he was sitting cross-legged on the floor drying the castor on the bottom of his bed. The most magnificent castor I've ever seen. Well, it was just unbelievable what happened to him, and he came alive, and right then is when they discovered they could do something about tuberculosis, so he's only in there about 6 more months and was out. Well, they had a fund to rehabilitate people. The state would pay for your tuition to go to a state university. But I didn't think that was the place for him. I thought the Art Center School was the best place. So I went down and pled a number of times for them to give that same funding for him to go to the Art Center School of Design, and they finally did it. So he graduated from there, and he got a job with what was then the biggest commercial art place in the United States, the Ayers Company, as a advertiser. Well, he got the Clio Award for the best television commercial. He went from the Ayers Company to the Hallmark Company. About 3 weeks ago, he made contact with me. He's over in Colorado Springs.
Ivan, what had to change in you in order to become a person who could see others and build these kinds of relationships?
Most people develop a habit of thinking about how they can get things. And that habit has to be controlled before anything else can take its place. And until they recognize that that's what they are, there's no need to change it. And I learned how important he was in my life. That his well-being was as significant as my own. That's when I came to the conclusion that everyone else was just as important as I was, no matter what they had done. There's many, many, many ways that you can deliver information. I had this curriculum set up, and that was the thing that I gave grades on. And I could tell whether the student was learning it or not and was able to apply it. But frequently, that student didn't need that. So then I would adjust it to fit their need.
When I asked Ivan to tell me about a student that needed something very different than the curriculum, he told me about meeting a man who worked with one of his former students.
And he said he took an art class from Mr. Cornea.
Then Ivan told me the story just as this man had shared it with him.
He told Mr. Cornea that he wasn't very happy with his electronics teacher, and Mr. Cornea asked him why, and he said, "Well, I want to make a robot." And Mr. Cornea said, "Well, you can do it here. All you got to do is take these art principles and draw it out for me and make certain that it's very accurate." I was teaching him all the art concepts as he was making that drawing of that robot. But he had to do it in the back room, in the supply room. Well, one day he came out and said, "It's done." So I said to the class, "So-and-so's got something he wants to show you. You've all been asking me how come he works back there." And out comes this little robot and starts walking up to all the girls and flirting with them, because he could control it, walk it around, and it could talk. So I took that curriculum and adapted it to him. And he didn't even know he was in an art class.
I love this. This has been so incredibly helpful. Thank you so much, Ivan. So where are we? What are the lessons? What is the key to developing people, even challenging people? My overwhelming sense, sitting with Ivan, is that He learned how to see people, really see them. That's the heart of it. And because he sees people and their potential, he's patient. He knows what is inside these kids. And so he's willing to let their development unfold. But patient isn't passive. He is at every step crystal clear, so they know where they are in their development. And when they fail to live up to their own potential, he tells them, never using a script, no techniques, no gimmicks, changing the curriculum to serve the person. I think, to use a word that's now gone out of style, I think what happened in that classroom and lives on now in the lives of these students is love. Leading Outward is produced by the Arbinger Institute. To have a conversation about how we can equip you to transform your leaders and organization, schedule a complimentary strategy session at arbinger.com. And whatever came to mind for you while you were listening, a conversation you put off, feedback that needs to be shared, action you need to take, don't wait. Take that action, because that's how change starts.